Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler, and you can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Tuesday, May 27th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, starting things off with the bad news as outfielder Matt Vierling was placed on the 10-day IL with shoulder inflammation. Vierling missed the first 2 months of the season with a strained rotator cuff and returned from the IL for just 4 days before heading back to the IL. He's likely out longer than the minimum 10 days, given the recurring nature of his shoulder injury. That's Matt Vierling. In a corresponding move, outfielder Wenciel Perez was activated from the 60-day IL. He had missed the entire season thus far with back inflammation. He's not guaranteed everyday playing time in Detroit, but Perez is likely to see time across the outfield. Our other IL placement involves first baseman Nick Kurtz, who was placed on the 10-day IL with a hip flexor strain. It's retroactive to May 25th, so that sort of suggests that the A's will attempt to bring Kurtz back in the minimum time so we could see him back in early June. CJ Alexander and Logan Davidson are expected to take over in a platoon at first base while Kurtz is out. In terms of transactions, starting pitcher Richard Fitz was activated from the 15-day IL to start in Milwaukee. He tossed 3 shutout innings, allowing 2 hits and 1 walk while striking out 2. Fitz had been out for a while with a pectoral strain and will return to what seems to be a 6-man rotation in Boston. Sean Newcomb was traded to the A's for cash in a corresponding move, so that's how they opened up a spot in the rotation for Fitz. So it looks like he's going to stick for a little while, but he's going to need to push a little harder to pitch deeper in this game so we can get some wins from Richard Fitz. In terms of news, shortstop Corey Seager is expected to be activated from the 10-day IL today. Josh Smith could shift from shortstop to first base to allow Jake Berger to DH, but Sam Haggerty has been at DH for a while and he's been swinging a hot bat, and the Rangers actually have him leading off. So there's something about that that should suggest to me they're not going to just throw him on the bench. So it's possible Berger ends up in some sort of platoon with Josh Smith at first, or Smith just ends up on the bench altogether, but I feel like they really like him. I have him on my fantasy team in my home league, so I really hope they don't bench him, but we'll see how that goes in Texas with Corey Seager returning. In terms of notable performances, we've got 15 games on our slate on Tuesday. We'll start things off with our hitters, with leading off with outfielder Jose Altuve, who does not lead off anymore. Very notable, in fact, that he doesn't. But Altuve helped the Astros to win against the A's, going 4-for-4 with 3 runs, 2 home runs, and 3 runs batted in. He's up to 8 homers on the year now. The first one traveled 348 feet. At just 95 miles per hour, clearly a Crawford box shot, and the second one went 410 feet at 102 miles per hour. At 35, is Altuve finally starting to regress? He's been so consistent throughout his career, it's difficult to imagine him falling off, but he's sporting the lowest batting average of his career outside of 2020, and even after a 4-for-4 night, Jose Altuve's .272 batting average is the lowest of his career. And even worse, his ability to impact the ball hard has dwindled, evident in a 5% barrel rate and a 30% hard hit rate, both of which are the lowest of his career since his rookie campaign. Obviously, Altuve will continue to take advantage of the Crawford boxes, which will allow him to get a decent amount of home runs as a right-handed hitter, calling Houston home. But Altuve's power ceiling is clearly falling, and as he gets older, he gets slower as well, meaning he's unlikely to reach the 20 stolen base threshold that he crossed last year. Maybe the outfield is taking more of a toll on Altuve than we expected, but it certainly looks like Altuve is starting to get old. Next, we have third baseman Oswald Peraza, who helped the Yankees to win in LA against the Angels, going 1-for-3 with a run, a home run, an RBI, and a walk. He's up to 3 homers on the year now, and this one traveled 408 feet at a pretty impressive 112 miles per hour. Peraza has taken over at third base with Oswaldo Cabrera out. And Peraza has not been consistent in his limited sample, but he's displayed some interesting tools and is in a good situation in a great Yankees lineup. He's got a 9% barrel rate, and he's displayed good instincts on the base paths. Peraza also exhibited an impressive combination of power and speed throughout his minor league career, but plate discipline has always been an issue for him. He's been unable to carry over his usually patient approach from the minors, and thus has struggled with strikeouts as a big leaguer. Until the strikeouts are resolved for Peraza, he will not reach the potential to make him viable in standard leagues. Next, we have outfielder Brenton Doyle, who did all he could, but the Rockies lost in Chicago to the Cubs, going 1-for-4 with a run, a home run, two RBIs, and a walk. He's up to 5 homers on the year now. This one traveled 371 feet at 103 miles per hour. And Doyle really seemed like a fantasy mainstay last year after backing up his solid rookie campaign with an impressive sophomore season that addressed the glaring issues he displayed as a rookie. But Doyle has gotten off to a slow start this year, but I'm here to tell you to buy low. Bro's got a career best marks in strikeout rate and walk rate and barrel rate and hard hit rate and contact rate, but he's somehow batting only .214 with a .632 OPS and a 58 WRC plus. I think as the weather heats up and Doyle sees more time in Coors, he'll take off offensively. I temper expectations a little bit with the awful team surrounding him in Colorado, but if you're looking for homers and steals, which let's be honest, who isn't, then I'd be buying low on Brenton Doyle. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Tuesday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Andre Pallante, who helped the Cardinals to win in Baltimore, tossing 5 2/3 innings, allowing six hits and 300 runs. He walked 3 while striking out 7, inducing 12 whiffs with 29% CSW across 96 pitches. And I think pitchers with extreme characteristics are extra interesting, and it usually gives me something to latch onto to target them in fantasy, basically something to back up my desire to roster them. And Pallante is one of those guys because of his elite ability to induce grounders. He entered Tuesday with a 99th percentile 64% ground ball rate, but unfortunately Pallante's reliance on grounders means he's due for low strikeout totals and a high whip because of all those balls in play. So to see his highest whiff total since early April was worth a closer look today. Pallante pumped 80% four-seamers against lefties and took advantage of a passive lineup, stealing 12 called strikes with the pitch for 27% CSW. And then against righties, sinkers were used more evenly with four-seamers, but they were located poorly and returned just 8% CSW. The savior of Pallante's night was his success with his secondary pitches, as his curveball returned a trio of whiffs and 33% CSW, and his slider was untouchable with 6 whiffs for 50% CSW. It's still nothing really different from Pallante than what we normally get from him, but as a Toby, he's somebody who can make it work against lowly lineups like he did on Tuesday and like in his next start against the Royals. Next, we have Logan Evans, who helped the Mariners to win against the Nationals, tossing 8 innings, allowing 4 hits and 1 run while walking 1 and striking out 4. He induced 5 whiffs with 27% CSW across 88 pitches. And our secondary streamer of the day came through big time as Evans used his kitchen sink approach and fortunate luck to breeze through 8 frames in Seattle. He faced exclusively lefties in this one and threw everything in the zone for a whopping 74% overall strike rate. Evans' cutters stayed glove side, his changeup stayed arm side, four seamers stayed up, and sweepers and curveballs were flung into the zone all willy-nilly, but everything except the changeup found at least a trio of called strikes and at least 29% CSW, but it all seems a bit of, here's my best stuff, try and hit it, but my stuff isn't that good, so most of the time you're going to be able to hit it. Evans is really just a deep, desperate streamer against poor offenses in Seattle, and it paid off here, but it's best not to push it with the Twins up next. And lastly, we've got Ranger Suarez, who helped the Phillies to win against the Braves, tossing 6 shutout innings, allowing 4 hits and 3 walks while striking out 8. He induced 11 whiffs with 25% CSW across 103 pitches. Since blowing up in his season debut, Suarez has been locked in and looks to be in that yearly groove where he deserves to be rostered everywhere. On Tuesday, he faced a righty-heavy lineup and effectively separated his pitches, spotting sinkers low, changeups arm side, cutters glove side, four-seamers upstairs, and surprise curves to steal strikes. His sinker stole stole seven called strikes, while his changeup induced seven whiffs. The four-seamer was a great put-away pitch, and the cutter kept him in at bats with a 72% strike rate. And I think we're just going to ride this Vargas rule for as long as it goes. Suarez gets the Brewers next, and I'm definitely starting him there. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Tuesday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Reed Garrett recorded his second save as he recorded the final outs, the final five outs, without allowing a hit. Edwin Diaz had pitched in three of the past 4 days, so the Mets gave him a day off. Next, we have Jeremiah Estrada, who recorded his first save of the season as he got the final four outs of the ballgame. Robert Suarez had pitched on back-to-back days and in four of the past five, so he needed a break, and Jeremiah Estrada capitalized. David Bednar recorded his sixth save with a perfect ninth. Devin Williams recorded his fifth save as he worked around two runs to do that. Luke Weaver had pitched on back-to-back days, so Williams was just filling in for one day. Still doesn't look like the old Devin Williams that we're used to. Will Vess worked around a run to record his seventh save. Ryan Helsley pitched a scoreless ninth for his 11th save. Jordan Romano recorded his seventh save with a perfect ninth. Yoan Duran is up to nine saves now after pitching a hitless ninth. And lastly, Robert Garcia recorded his third save with a perfect ninth. It looks like he's taken over the closer role in Texas. In terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, we have just one, as Aroldis Chapman allowed a run in the ninth to blow his first save, and the Red Sox would go on to lose that one in 10 innings. But if you'd like more information on relievers, check out Rick Graham's weekly articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now I'll look forward to Wednesday, May 28th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. My matchup of the day is Paul Skeens versus Zach Gallen. Skeens is always must watch TV, obviously, and Gallen continues to try to reclaim his ace status. It's not going well this year, but the dude has the stuff. He knows how to pitch. We've seen him pitch at an ace level before, so hopefully we can see that again on Wednesday against Paul Skeens. In terms of probable starters, we've got seven guys in our auto starts tier, including Skeens. We've also got guys like Zach Wheeler versus the Braves, Hunter Green in Kansas City, and Pablo Lopez in Tampa Bay. Our probably starts tier is six guys, and our questionable starts tier is six guys as well. And that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Landon Rupp in Detroit. It's a pretty risky matchup. I mean, the Tigers lineup is not one that we've been scared of in the past, but somehow they're one of the best teams in baseball this year, and things are really working out for them. So you've got to be a little wary of starting pitchers against them. But with Rupp, he's had a lot of success this year, but this is a questionable start because of the matchup, not because of Rupp's ability. He should be able to find some success here in Detroit. I'd also keep an eye out for Cade Povich versus the Cardinals. It's not a scary lineup, and Povich is not somebody with a super high ceiling despite his prospect status and age. He is somebody that you'd most likely do expect to go out there and get a quality start and pitch like a Toby, and hopefully Povich can do this against the Cardinals. In terms of hitter suggestions, I go for Marlins and Padres hitters in Petco Park. Not the best hitter's park, but the pitching matchup is not ideal if you're trying to prevent runs. It's ideal if you're looking for hitters, which is what this section is all about. But we'll see Sandy Alcantara take on Kyle Hart. Alcantara's got an 8.04 ERA, while Hart is returning from the minors and has a 6 ERA. I love Sandy, but yeah, this has not been a great year for him. I think we'll see a high-scoring game on Wednesday in Petco Park. I'd also target Blue Jays and Tigers hitters in Globe Life Stadium. The Blue Jays have not yet determined their starter, so maybe it's somebody bad and the Rangers or the Tigers can take advantage of that. Excuse me, it is the Rangers, and the Rangers can take advantage of that. And on the other side will be Tyler Mahle, who somehow has a 1.80 ERA. And you're now, I know you're saying, Jake, why would you suggest streaming hitters against a guy who's got a sub-2 ERA? Well, that's because I don't believe that Tyler Molly's going to have a sub-2 ERA all year long. And at some point, it's going to turn around and he's going to have a blow-up performance. So I'm going to keep suggesting it when I see an opportunity to stream against Tyler Mahle, because at some point it's going to fall apart and that ERA is going to inflate. And you're going to want to be the guy who streams hitters against him when that happens. And now we'll close things out with our relievers to watch. Will Vess has pitched on back-to-back days and in three of the past four, so we should see Tommy Kahnle in the ninth for the Tigers. And lastly, Yoan Duran has pitched in three of the past 4 days, so we could see Griffin Jacks or Cole Sands get a save opportunity for the Twins on Wednesday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. Tune in live on YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.